welcome to the Wine Vault. On tonight's episode, Rob and Scott review the Turley Wine Cellars Library Vineyard Petit Syrah from Napa Valley. So sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's Wine Vault. Welcome to the Wine Vault. It is I, Rob the Wine Guy, and tonight, I am joined by Scott, the unlicensed taxi driver.
It's good to be here tonight, and it's a special night.
It is a special night tonight, folks, because once again, we are drinking Turley.
Can you
imagine that one reason why we drink Turley is because we own a fuck ton of it, but another reason why we drink Turley is because we love it.
And it's fucking great.
Now, how often do you really get something from an episode where we're drinking Turley? I don't know, because it's not readily available. But tonight we're going to try to bring in the real world to this wine. We're going to try to make it, applicable to your everyday drinking experiences. How we're going to do that, I don't fucking know. I just said that right now off the top of my head.
Yeah, I was going to say, what the fuck are you talking about?
But we're going to fucking do it. God damn it. Anyway,
God damn it.
The wine we're drinking tonight is a Petit Syrah, and it's from their Library Vineyards. It's their 2017 Library Vineyards Petit Syrah, and that's in Napa Valley wine. Now, Scott has some information about the Library Vineyard, which is kind of actually interesting.
So, to be completely transparent, this sucker has a high score from one of our most endeared and trusted wine reviewers.
Thank you, Scott. I appreciate the accolades and the respect.
No, go fuck yourself. Oh. We're talking about Robert Parker.
Oh, okay.
Neither Rob nor I knew it. I'm like, hey, you want me to bring a bottle of Turley Petit Syrah? And he's like, yeah, what about that Napa thing? Well, I'll bring the light. He's like, what about that new Napa thing? Well, this is not a new Napa thing.
No.
Library Vineyard has been, Turley's been making this since the dawn of time. The Library Vineyard is one of the most unique vineyards in California, planted between 1880 and 1920, directly behind the St. Helena Public Library.
See, most of their stuff has some sort of landmark
fucking history. Recognition.
So this is actually at a library. That's why they call it the library. Like their 101 vineyard is off the 101. I mean, it's kind of interesting in that regard.
There was many years ago, Rob would mock me for my love of field blends. Is this a field blend, Scott? This is a real field blend. The vineyard is primarily Petit Syrah vines, but it's mixed with a myriad of others. Listen to this list, folks. Pelorson, don't even know what that is. Cinsault, Syrah, Mission, Alicante Boucher, Grand Noir, Carignan, Grenache, and Zinfandel. There also are a number of white grapes such as Muscat, Alexandria, Muscadel, Burger, don't know what that is, and Green Hungarian. Never heard of that.
No, never heard of
Zinfandel. But this is Turley. They buy vines, bring them back to life, and I don't know the state of this vineyard when they bought it.
I don't think Library
has a story about this being reclaimed. I think this might have been in good shape when they got it.
They've had this for a while, but I've had their Library Zins before. I've had a Library Petit Syrah or two as well, but yeah, they do a good job of, in some cases, bringing back kind of dead vineyards in good, they're not going to go down to fucking Lodi and do that, but they do have a Lodi Zin.
There's a couple Lodi Zins.
The Stisi vineyard actually is really, really good. I enjoyed that quite a bit, but they're not going to go find plunk. They're going to go back and reclaim things that are excellent and bring them back to life and bring them back to really prominence. And this is one of those wines. And it's exciting to drink.
1880?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Their stuff is old.
Seriously?
Yeah, you're going to find there's a lot of great wineries out there. One is not Robert Bialy, but there are some.
Robert Bialy.
No, there are some great, great Zin Petite Syrah producers that exist in California. We're talking legendary stuff. Turley is one of those. You know, some would say Martinelli might be one of those. Some would say, I would say Ridge is one of those.
We love Ridge.
I really love Ridge. Ridge is a little less expensive than those other ones, but I really love Ridge. And so, you know, we're getting to that area where we're talking about primo elite wine. Some people would say also Robert Bialy is shit, but I would say that.
And listen, we talk about how difficult it is to get your hands on Turley. Actually, it's not that hard.
It's not.
All you have to do is sign up for the mailing list.
And you'll eventually get on there and be able
to get on right away.
Because they make a lot of the juvenile. They make a lot of the old vine. And those are really great wines.
You're not going to have everything offered to you.
No.
But a little secret, the more you buy, the more they're going to offer it to you.
And quite frankly, the inexpensive stuff, Juvie through their website, is $20 a bottle plus shipping. And the juvenile with 2 or 3 years age on them, always, are great wines.
And
always age them 2 to 3 years.
You can't beat. There's two wines from theirs that you can't beat for the price when you get on their mailing list. The Juvie and the Old Vine.
The Old Vine is a little bit more ready to drink. It's Triple B's favorite, but
it's not much more. It's $3-4 more.
Yeah,
but
it's 25.
You can't beat it. Princess and I have found ourselves enjoying the cabs a little more frequently, but they also need time.
Well, did you get an allocation offer of that this year? I didn't. For the Cabernet? I assume with Howe Mountain.
Yeah. Well,
you did?
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
Dickheads. Fuck them. I wouldn't have bought it anyway. Although I normally buy the Cabernets. They're just not. They're okay. Really?
Well,
it could be. Scott spends like $10,000 a month through Turley. And with Howe Mountain catching on fire and them losing it, they probably have a very, 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 very small amount to offer.
Yeah, I think. Well, it's future cabs that they're not going to have. They about a year ago, they sent out what was going to be problematic and what wasn't.
Yeah, most of their Howe Mountain stuff is gone right now for the next couple of years. Cedarman is one of them. I assume Dragon and Rattlesnake are also gone since their Howe Mountain.
I don't remember, but I don't think all of it was.
Well, Cedarman is a blend of both of those, so I would assume. I know Cedarman's gone for at least a couple of years.
Okay.
And most of their cabs are all Howe Mountain based, so. But
you know, they have stuff everywhere. But folks, getting back to the story about Turley, just you just go to the website, sign up, and you'll get an offering. And you know, their shipping I think is fair.
It's fair. It's not $40 a bottle.
They tell you how to get the best bang for your buck.
If you get about
what they recommend is to buy it by the threes to get the best value for your shipping.
Yeah, it's about $5.25 a bottle.
I think that if you get like three bottles, it's $7.
Is it that much?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. But the more you,
I normally
get the less the shipping.
I normally get. Last time I think I did 9 bottles, so it was like 5.
You pick your shipping. It depends on what state you're in. They can ship directly to you, or you can always at least ship. At least I believe you can always ship to like a FedEx delivery site and pick it up at the FedEx site, at no extra cost. We love it, and then you're in like Flynn, and you won't be sorry.
No,
you won't be sorry. I buy a little more than Rob, but
you buy a little more than most people.
I have no self-control, and I just there's been things that I've gotten that just weren't my thing, but everything's great.
Wine.com told me I bought 88 bottles of wine from them last year, but I saved $1,500 in shipping fees.
It's fucking. The stewardship program at wine.com is ridiculous.
Ooh, that's a lot of money.
$53 for
But
free
I wouldn't
shipping.
Have bought 88 bottles of wine through them as well. So
$53. And folks, you know, $7 for a bottle of wine seems like a lot. But when you go on some of these websites, how about $20 for a bottle of wine with no bottle discount?
Yeah.
It's a pain in the ass for some of these companies to ship wine. They're not in the shipping business. So, and you've got old family vineyards, and they just don't want the hassle of it.
But even Schaefer has terrible shipping rates.
Yeah.
Terrible.
They're one of the ones that I think is $20 a bottle.
Yeah, it is. And it's just, come on, man. But with that, folks, we're going to take a break. But we'll be right back here on the Wine Vault.
Hey, everybody. It's Rob the Wine Guy. Do you love the Wine Vault? Do you want the world to know about the Wine Vault? Well, do you know the best way to do that? By giving us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Whether that be on iTunes or Stitcher or TuneIn or Spreaker or Podbean or some other app I've never heard of but probably gave your phone a virus when you downloaded it. So take that time. Give us that review. Give us your thoughts and feedback. That way, everyone will know to listen to, enjoy, and join us on the Wine Vault. And we'll be right back.
And we're back, folks. So, the review for this wine. Then we're going to talk a little bit about Petit Sirah. So, this wine got 97 plus from Robert Parker's Wine Advocate. And he wrote, "The Library Vineyard was planted well." We already know that. And where are we at? Very deep, opaque, purple black in color. The 17 Petit Sirah Library Vineyard has a very savory nose of dried mushroom, toasted coconut, bacon fat, dried lilac, and violets over a dense black fruit core, with notes of black cherry and black currant liqueur. Full-bodied and huge in the mouth, the single palate is very savory, with an absolute indestructible black and blue fruit core, plus touches of perfume and earth, framed by very firm, chewy tannins, and just enough freshness to carry the finish. Now, Petit Sirah in general, it is a different one. One that we don't feature that often on the show. Why? Because I don't like it. That's one reason why. There's so many things out there to drink. I don't choose to drink Petit Sirah. Baby. Ever. Scott likes it more, but he likes it more in the Turley range. You're not buying anything other than Turley and Petit Sirah, really.
Correct.
Yeah.
I mean, I bought other Petit Sirahs.
I don't collect Petit Sirahs. I just don't buy them. I mean, I have a smattering, but they're mostly, once again, Turley. I have one from Kema Susan. That's about it. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just, in its basic sense, it's been perverted by the wineries. It's a perfect poster boy for factory-made wine because it can add color to a wine.
Well, it's not always manipulated the way you're implying. It's a common blend with Zinfandel, and I think that's why I grew attached to it. You know, if you have love for Zinfandel, you're putting Petit Sirah in your mouth. It's like Wilfred Wrong in a men's bathroom. You know, something's going in his mouth. What? And he's going to think it's good.
Come on, man.
What, you didn't like that?
It was pretty harsh.
Well, I'm being harsh.
Those men have urinated. I'm not going to put some man's dick in my mouth.
I didn't
say
anything about a dick.
What else is there?
Jesus Christ.
Your finger? That's just teasing me.
Nose? Toe?
I'm going to put a man's dick in my mouth. That's what I'm going to do. We know that.
Jesus.
But I'm not going to do that in a restroom. I give hand jobs in restrooms, Scott. You know this. But that's...
I have no clue what you do in restrooms.
You do too. You were at the Tamarack and you tapped your foot. You know what happened there. You were all about it. You even called me by my name. Isn't there a movie about that?
There's a movie. There's a couple songs.
Call me by my... Isn't that there? I would start
but
that...
It's also what they do in jail.
It was started
you
by...
You know about that.
It was that guy that kind of looks like a girl, and then the other guy likes to eat women. He likes to talk about eat women, because that gets him off. And now he's selling condos in the Bahamas or some shit like that. Armie Hammer. That's right. He was the guy that was... neither one of them were gay, and they're pretending... And it's like, you know, it's like an underage guy and an older guy. And Everybody thought that was great, apparently.
You really don't know much about film, do you?
They don't know it much either. So, you know. Call me
you
by...
You should know
what
more
other
about...
name would you call somebody? Skank Box? I've been called that. I don't even
yes,
know that
you
means.
Have.
That's an unusual name.
You should know more about film because...
I said, call me by my name, and they said...
Avoid all these security cameras. It would be helpful
say,
in your line of work.
And I was like, what? Come, slut. Don't call me that. Or do. I don't know. What is... I don't know.
Back to Turley.
Yes. You brought me up, by the way.
I didn't bring you up. I was trying to bring you down.
Your
trust me.
Fault.
So. But the...
Come, slut. Nobody ever uses that term anymore.
You do all the
I
time.
I just did. Twice.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Why are you...
Is bukkake a Japanese word? That's what I just want to know. I know it's popular there, but, you know, is it Japanese or is it something else?
Bukkake.
Yeah, that word. Yes, look that up.
on
your computer.
Why...
At work.
Are you...
Why?
A petite Syrah shamer, sir.
Me?
You. No.
Oh.
Your other alter ego, okay, Wilfred.
Yeah, that's right. I don't say those words. Why? I'm not a shamer.
You're a shamer.
You're
a hater.
I've experienced the bad parts.
Hashtag Rob hates PT Syrah.
Why would I want light Syrah? I just want Syrah. I love Syrah. Well, I love Syrah, but it doesn't taste anything like Petite Syrah.
It doesn't. Well, there's some similar characteristics.
Scott, they're great. Petite Syrah is great. That's fine. But it's just... mediocre Petite Syrah is bad.
Yeah.
I think we both agree with that.
Well,
I mean, other than McManus, it's not good.
That
if someone had said, hey, would you drink this J-Lore Petite Syrah? You go, no.
What the McManus we liked, is that the one? The Petite Syrah we had that was...
I think we've had Petite Syrah from McManus, but it's so undervalued. So
it's very undervalued. But we liked it.
Then.
And it seemed...
I don't know if we'd like it now, but...
Like a... Bogle Petite Syrah that we like
Bogle,
too?
I hate Bogle Petite Syrah, but
didn't we
we've had it.
Like it? Kind
I've
of, sort
never
of?
Liked it, and you didn't like it last time you had it.
Okay.
No.
But we did, when we first had it, we kind of sort
no,
of liked
I've
it.
I've never liked Bogle.
Okay.
There are people
it seemed
allegedly,
like there were two that we did on the show that we liked.
I hate Bogle Petite Syrah, so did you. But we had Bogle Petite Syrah Port. It was fine.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, it was fine. It wasn't good, but
it was
fine.
It was interesting.
The bottle was tall. It's right over there.
It was interesting.
It's interesting that they make it. Yes. Yeah.
Let's get back to the wine. You're detracting.
When you try to use Bogle as an example, you got a hard
I was
word.
Trying to remember the two Petite Syrahs we liked outside
it's
of the
never,
Turley world.
The answer to that is never Bogle. This, though, I mean, you're talking like raisiny prune on the nose. Very, almost like it's almost a port nose, which
look
isn't unusual.
Look at the legs on this.
Well, I know. 14.8% alcohol, though.
Little bit of tartaric acid, acidic crystalline structure, so we might have some acidity. This could probably go a few years longer.
Oh, sure it could.
Where's the tag? I think I put the recommended range for drinking on this
I
thing.
See it not.
I want to say 2023 was the first year recommended for drinking this sucker.
Here it is. It's poorly written, and it doesn't say anything about that.
Mm. Damn it, I didn't write it on there.
No, you didn't. Fail. No. Their Petite Syrah age pretty well. I would suggest this would go strong towards 2030, historically. I'm going to go in. But a nose of, yeah... dried prune, raisin.
Oh, there's more going on than that, sir.
Well, I'm not done yet. Milk chocolate.
Forest.
Yeah.
You've got like forest flavor.
No. Dark forest chocolate cake.
No, forest is forest like forest floor, like...
No.
Pine needles. Mm-mm.
Oh, it was great. A German chocolate cake, something like that, too, is there. Because it has the coconut aspect that they were mentioning. I smell the coconut. That's a lovely thing. And sure, it has a little bit of an earthy kind of thing going on, but the German chocolate cake is just Black Forest German chocolate cake is just really screams out there. And it's really
the coconut. You can almost pull the coconut element right out of that individualistically.
Yeah, German chocolate cake, like every day of the week. That's nice.
And I mean, yeah, the prune, like almost like red currant.
I mean, it does have a slight funky aspect, but not in a negative way. And someone could say that's mushroomy, but it's
very. That's what the review said.
I know, but it's a little clean for that. But I get. If you do snuff all the time, you might think it's mushroomy.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, it's Parker.
The only thing you do is snuff films. Too bad you weren't the primary character.
I know, you always... I was the key grip on that movie, by the way.
Yeah, you're a grip.
That's right. With my right hand. My left hand is gentle.
This is just a beautiful thing in the glass. You just give it a swirl, and these legs are just... so long and so slow to develop. It's just a beauty in the glass.
It's...
I don't like potato.
Well, I mean, it's...
I only like good potato raw. Yeah, but Scott buys potato raw. Why are you buying potato raw? Why do you buy potato raw from Charlie?
That's Scott impersonating his wife, actually.
No.
She
doesn't complain about anything I buy from Charlie.
Yeah, it is what potato raw is supposed to taste like. I know that there's a lot of places that think that their wines taste kind of like this. They're wrong, but first of all, it's a really, really great, great Petite Sirah. Length, depth, complexity, all of those things score off the charts. It's not my favorite wine because the varietal itself isn't my favorite wine, but forgetting all that, you're an asshole if you don't acknowledge the fact that...
the quality of this.
Yeah, it's just...
the superior nature of this wine.
It just has a depth. It's like, oh, I fell in a hole, and the hole goes forever. And the hole is just rich and rich and rich and dense and dense and dense, and just has every aspect of it you could ever imagine. The length still goes on.
And you fall... Yeah, my first sip, the finish is just now ending. And... yeah, but the fall through the substance goes so slow. It's like you're falling through pudding. That's the speed at which you fall, because it's like when you drink this wine, it's like you're going in slow motion.
Now,
your brain goes, whoa, wait a minute, stop, slow down. Stop what you're doing, because I'm about to ruin it. Image and the style that you're used to.
For me, though, I have to take a different viewpoint where I appreciate everything this wine's doing. It isn't something that I necessarily have a love affair with. I don't. But I recognize that this is really quintessentially what a Petite Sirah is supposed to be at its highest end, really. I mean, there are some probably that are superior, but I mean, not Hain Vineyard, because it's terrible, but it really is this rabbit hole of complexity. Front palate, is it necessarily this big, bright fruit? It is not. Why? Because that is not what a great wine necessarily is. It's not a fruit bomb where it's just going to show everything up front. It's going to wait till the mid palate comes in, and then you're going to get lovely baking spice. You're going to get floral notes. You're going to get forest notes. You're going to get all these things going through. You're going to get a nice core of a fruit that is always there, that is always maintaining, and you're going to be able to taste the elements of oak that are framing and accenting the wines in almost the exact right moments that you want it to be framed and accented.
Bacon fat.
Bacon fat is a core element of it, yes.
Hazelnut.
Hazelnut is.
It's the most wonderful expression of hazelnut I've ever had in my
life. Well, that comes from that herbaceous core where the fruit is not the focus. There is fruit, and it's there, and it keeps it bright and fresh like you want it. But what you gravitate to is not the fruit. What you gravitate to is things like the hazelnut notes, the underbrush tones that are so well integrated with everything else that it really makes a wine just sing. But it's almost like normally when you're looking at a great painting, it's there. It's there in a two-dimensional shape. You can view it and it's there. It doesn't go on, though. You know, you can extrapolate from a painting the different elements of it, you know, the different influences, whatnot. But it is what it is on the page. This shows up front what it is. And then it transcends and evolves over a period of a minute or more, showing different sides and accentuating different elements of the wine. All traditional elements of a Petite Sirah, but, you know.
What this wine has that's so spectacular, the tannins at one point are gripping,
mm-hmm.
and then they're dusty, and at the end there's a little chalkiness because they go on and on and on.
Yeah.
I do have at least one more vintage of this. But I know one thing. I don't know how much of this I'm going to buy in the future when it's offered, but it's going to be more than one bottle.
Well, it's $42, folks. This doesn't cost $120. I mean,
well,
and that's the other thing.
Retail.
Well, sure, retail.
$99.
I know, but
our offering when I bought this was $42.
That's the thing. Turley sells it at a reasonable cheap cost.
You get significantly discounted from what you're going to pay off a retail show.
If you see Hain, you're going to see it for $125. Not that you should ever buy it, but you would.
Yes,
you're going to buy it for $70 from them.
$75.
Yeah, the Monterosa, which I don't know if you would ever find that out there. It was $60-something. Most of their stuff, though, is sub-$50. The Uber Ruth is $54, $55, but everything else is sub-$50, and you never, ever, ever, ever would find that in a retail store at that price. You're never going to find Rattlesnake or Dragon for under 50. You're never going to find, hell man, like Ducey sells for 60. I mean, and it's 32. You know, you can buy all their Amador stuff for right around $30 plus shipping. But
back in the day, I think we found it, what, at the Andersons for probably about $5 more than what we paid, including the shipping price.
From what I normally see, Old Vine Zin goes for about $38, $39 a bottle.
But I think that's probably even a little more now. Probably.
It could be. And there with shipping out the door, if you buy enough bottles, you're at $30.
We see some Turley here at your finer wine shops.
Yeah.
We're in Columbus, Ohio. Moo, you know, you go to the minor league baseball game and they ring cowbells. And we see it in wine shops here. But folks, get on the mailing list. Yes, we're Turley hacks. We love Turley. Enough of that. Let's get back to this wine.
Mm-hmm.
Let's pick out all the elements in this thing.
I will say one thing about Turley, though. One more. The only reason why I like Turley, forgetting the quality, is what we were alluding to. You buy the wine from them at a ridiculously lower amount than you would ever find at retail, even after shipping. If you want to buy their wines, you can buy it from them insanely cheaper, ridiculously cheaper than you'd ever find that. I dare you to find another winery that's true with. I have never seen another winery that exists with.
And you can call and talk to them on the phone. Incredible customer service. This is a core part of their business, the mail order part of the business.
I defy you to find another winery where you can buy the wines cheaper from them, way cheaper than you could ever find it at a store.
They this is an important part of their business, and, yep. and hopefully it never goes away.
Yep.
they live this. They bring dead vines back to life. It's the epitome of winemaking. It's the epitome of a winery.
Well, they don't play a part in price gouging often in the, well, we'll just call the retail market for them, a secondary market. There's price gouging that goes on. And so there isn't really a fixed number that is associated with what their people are charging. They don't play that game. They will sell to you at what they sell to everybody else at. So, but in the glass, yeah, it's prune up front, prune and a little bit of raisin with red currant.
Yeah. I think a kiss of
cherry.
I was going to go sweet fruit, mm-hmm. blueberry, like an overly ripe blueberry. Sweet cherry, fine. But just a kiss.
Mm-hmm.
It's, and that goes, I don't want to say really fast, mm-hmm. but it's not this huge fruit bomb.
No.
It's very subtle.
Yeah.
The prunes omnipresent and kind of travels through the wine into the mid palate.
Well, think of it. The fruit is like a shell on the outside of the wine, all right, that you go through. And then once you get past that shell of fruit, is really where it starts to sing. And initially, you're going to be hit with a bump and grind zone. The radio right now.
Did you say radio?
Well, Spotify. So he gets no money. A little bit of, you know,
on
what?
The AM radio.
Scott, get this then. Across all the herbaceousness, the mouthfeel almost is just a smattering of caramel.
it And
you like that, don't you?
Well, it's just this
it's there.
Richness.
Yeah,
about
but it's not ostentatious. It's just a smattering of caramel over everything. So everything has just like a smear of caramel on top of it. So, okay, there's a little bit of underbrush tones with a smear of caramel. And there's just a little bit of, you know, the one thing I will say that I don't get are floral notes. I don't get that with this wine at all. Herbaceous, yes. Pencil lead, sure. Bacon fat, absolutely. Violets, lilacs, no.
But I think that bacon fat goes with that caramel texture.
It does.
Maybe just a
slight fattiness of some sort.
Yeah, and I think that's in there with that lovely, lovely, lovely hazelnut.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is all these different things dance in and out of this savory core
mm-hmm.
with this tannic structure that shifts gears. It's yeah. grippy tannins, then there's sandy, grainy, whatever tannins, yep. and then there's freaking the deepest, densest. Rob's air singing.
Yeah, I am.
Go open in there. Just do it. Just go.
Open up that door.
Man. Just go.
What?
Just wail on it.
Someone like me, yeah, yeah. To make love to you, baby, constantly. I don't need. That's all you can say. Yeah.
Ain't nothing wrong.
With a little bump and grind.
With a little bump and grind.
Nothing wrong. Folks, I would recommend going back and listening to season one. It's back before. You know, we'll get to that here in a second. We'll talk a little bit about the lineage of the wine vault. But we're going to take a break, though. because we want to savor this wine, come back and center our thoughts and drink some more and enjoy everything here on the Wine Vault. We'll be right back. And we're back, folks. So, we're at season 7 of the Wine Vault, and you have a skip function on your iTunes. So, Scott and I, we're going to go back and just think a little bit about the lineage of the Wine Vault and some memorable things. 7 seasons, and by the way, so you understand, seasons equate to years. So,
essentially,
1 year is a season. So we've been doing this for 7 goddamn years now. 300.
What's that mean? Forget lineage. What's that mean? It means we're fucking drunks.
Oh yeah, over 340 episodes as of the end of season 6, and I think season 6 had 54 episodes. So there you go.
Yeah.
And so we'll be damn near close to 400 episodes. We won't actually make it season 7.
Well, how many episodes have not been published?
Oh shit, a lot.
Probably more than half.
100.
Well.
At least. Yeah. About 100. Maybe 150. We've done a lot of these things. And I don't know. I don't remember the last time we actually talked about this. But how this ever came to be and what made us start doing this. And we've got an email or two asking us about how we decided to get started with this. And it was been 2016. Becky suggested to me, it was like fall, what, maybe October? Yeah,
Thanksgiving.
Yeah, before that, somewhere around there, you should do a podcast. And I was like, oh, do it on wine. I was like, oh, okay. So, didn't really have that much equipment. We had a laptop and this and that. And I hooked some stuff up and just did some goofy stuff. And I still have it on the computer here. But we're using the same MacBook Air since the whole damn, same damn computer the whole damn time. It's been admirable. We've had to delete a bunch of shit off it
because we had some problems.
We fill up the hard drive quite frequently, but and so I called Scott and said, you know, we're thinking about doing a podcast, and Scott just said yes. He didn't say what's it going to be about. Scott just said yes.
Well, Becky's the line went something like this. Yeah, Becky and I've been talking. She thinks I should do a wine podcast, and she said you'd be good on it.
Yeah.
Okay.
She lies a lot.
Well, no. Yeah. I felt very honored.
Yeah, yeah.
But then, actually, before you and I did any of this, you set up the podcast at the men's Christmas party.
Oh, we did. We had a Christmas party, and it was before we released anything, and Scott and I were doing this thing pretty much. We were just trying to figure ourselves out. We did.
That was the first time we did it.
Yeah.
It was the first time I put my mouth in front of a microphone.
Yeah, 2 or 3 months of just, like, goofing around.
Well, so here's the funny part. Mm-hmm. We're having this men's Christmas party. Rob decides we're going to podcast that night. Nobody knew it but me and Rob.
No, they didn't.
We had lined up, I think, like 7 fucking lines.
We did.
Hank wouldn't do it.
No, Hank wouldn't. And what I did
Steve
is...
Steve was late.
Steve's always late.
Common Man was good.
Greg Common.
He was good.
What we did is I ran mic cables over the ceilings with these little golden hooks. And if you look in the ceilings, the golden hooks are still fucking in the ceilings.
The audience can't see the ceilings.
Well, I know. But it's
he
in
had
a base,
mics hanging from the ceilings.
We podcast in a basement. Shocker. And it's been tied of the way. We even have a sign. We even have a Wine Vault sign.
It's now. A beautiful sign.
It's a beautiful sign. My sister gave it to me. But she had it made. Custom.
It, we
But so, the gold hooks, though, from where the mic cables were ran, are still hanging. That's how lazy I am. But, you know. And we also had Christmas lights from that first episode, first season. And the lights don't work. They burned out a long time ago, but I've never taken them down. So they still hang from the ceiling. That's ridiculous.
We got started. It was primarily the wine guy, myself, and the superstar.
It's true.
We would do 3, 4, maybe 5 bottles a night.
We didn't quite understand the purpose of having a publishable product.
Well, and we also had some sound quality issues.
True.
Made some mic changes, developed some professionalism, i.e. Triple B started participating.
Oh, I don't know if it was professionalism, but I read some Google articles about how to set up GarageBand, because GarageBand is our software of choice, and people are like, what? That's right, GarageBand. It's fucking free, dickheads. We're not buying fucking software. We use GarageBand, in case you didn't know. That is the sole software of the Wine Vault.
Or Lowbrow.
GarageBand. It works fine, although I know...
He published for almost a year on one channel.
Douglas, one time.
We one published of our listeners, on 1 year.
I know. One channel. You just listened to 1 year, man. But Douglas suggested, could you get it a little bit louder? Because I can't listen to it on my Amazon, whatever it was. I was like, not really, Douglas. We're on GarageBand. So I've tweaked it as high as I can. I think it actually works all right. You have to turn it up, though. I apologize for that. But unfortunately, there are some limits to the technology we use, and there's also some limits to the intelligence of the people that are using it, partly because we're drunk when we're actually doing this.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Hey, you know, some I can't hear it. Well, guess what? You're dealing with a drunk person that's dealing with a soundboard that's down below him. I don't even touch it anymore. I don't even adjust it anymore, man.
Well, now that you wear pants during the episode.
I just turned Becky's mic on and off. I don't even fuck with it. Now, the only problem we ever have with the soundboard is if one of my children come in and start turning shit. That just fucks us all to hell, because I don't remember what the hell I said everything at. That doesn't happen that often, but I used to have 6 children. Now I have 4 because I killed 2 because they did that, but still, you know.
That's not even
but
funny.
But nevertheless, I know.
Not funny.
Season 1, though. Go back and listen to that. It's all on our website.
Don't.
Well, that's bad, but there was some... It's just kind of... you go back, and I think if you ever listen to any podcast, except for True Crime, which is terrible, you go back. And
Moneymaker.
I know, but you listen to the kind of the idea. I don't really think we got into we're comfortable in our format to what, maybe season 3?
I think it was a process. I think we grew into it, and I think it was somewhere in the middle of season 2 where like, we're getting okay at this.
Well, it's more of just a...
serious about it. And we, you know, we are comfortable talking about whatever we want to talk about. Ourselves, our family. Sometimes we talk about current events. Sometimes we talk about politics.
Sometimes we talk about Bukkake. Did you look that up, Scott?
Mostly Rob talks about Wilford Vrong.
No, that's right. Scott, first of all, everybody knows you do that voice.
Characters that have been come and gone.
You've done that voice.
Sven has come and gone.
He never had a voice. He was just somebody that you had sex with.
the penophile.
Triple B gets offended when she hears my voice. I'm like, it's a penophile. And
the penophile's son.
I have a Scooby-Doo son in there. His face melted. He's like ice cream, and he's in the car, and he's like,
Rob's alter ego, the common man, the southern man.
Oh, southern.
Western man. They're all the same person.
It's southern man, Scott. Are you a fucking stupid asshole?
It's all a play on Greg the Common Man.
It has nothing to do with Greg the Common Man.
That's the origination of the
voice.
He
doesn't talk like this.
That's what you did.
I had nothing to do with Greg.
Well,
Greg, he has nothing. He is not.
We didn't use his name. We just called him the Common Man.
This is a voice.
But it was his voice.
Would you like to know where this voice came from?
It came from you mimicking the Common Man.
No. There's a person that goes to the Triple B's church in down south. And his name. Okay. His name is, we'll just call, you know what? His name is Army.
It's easy for you to
say. He's just like he's in the Call Me By My Name, and you know he's
call my name.
He's
call
having
my
sex
name,
with some underage boy. But anyway, he would give.
It is Southern Ohio.
He gives sermons. He's a preacher now.
It's, like I said, it is Southern Ohio.
And so,
of course, he's a preacher.
And
God damn the preacher man.
I would do impersonations of Army. I would go listen to his sermons so I would understand his voice. And first of all, the Southern man is a very rounded off modern version of Arnie. And I will get into the voice of Arnie. So first of all, I make noise.
You eliminated the chopping mouth things. That doesn't
come
across well.
I make noises like camel.
A camel.
A camel. And I talk very slow. And I talk about my ducks. I have ducks.
Ducks.
Now I live in my parents' house.
Lord.
They're dead. How did they die?
No one knows.
That's
no one knows.
Well, someone knows.
One person knows.
Let's ignore that. Anyway.
Anyway.
I talk about veterans. I never served in the military.
I hate those people.
And I look like a vampire.
Not the veterans, but the people who didn't serve in the military and talk
about
veterans.
It's easier. Essentially,
shut the fuck
up. The Southern man is Arnie. Well, he's the guy. He's not Greg at all. That has nothing to do with Greg. And it's a take on that. And also, for some reason, I think of the Beverly Hillbillies from the show. My voices. We'll talk about my voices. You know, it's like, when they shot the oil came up. From,
yeah.
Beverly Hillbillies.
What, okay, yeah.
It's, that's where that comes from.
Okay.
James Suckling. I don't know why I think he sounds like that, because he sounds like a whiny
bitch.
He doesn't
sound like that.
I'm James Suckling. Yeah, that's what he sounds like.
Well, you made him out to be.
A very, very great, although a closeted pervert. Now, Wilford, first of all, Becky thought I was being racist with Wilford.
Well.
Which she thought I was being Gilbert. She thought I was trying to imitate Gilbert Godfrey, and she thought he was Asian. And I said, first of all, Gilbert isn't Asian. Second of all, he doesn't sound like Gilbert. Gilbert or Wilford, and God rest.
And we're
his
doing
soul.
Wilford wrong.
Wilford,
is who we're doing.
Yeah.
Wilford wrong.
Wilford is just an insane, crazy bastard. That's the whole point of the voice.
Well, I don't have.
I think
any.
He's beyond insane, crazy bastard. He's,
not, he's just
he's
everything.
A sexual deviant.
Well, he's a deviant of every kind. Anything that someone could do that was horrendous or perverted. Wilford does.
Well, I think we skipped over a early theme in the lineage, which was maybe in the unlicensed taxi driver and your line joke that I
you do
murdered hookers.
You did murder hookers.
And buried them in your backyard.
We did talk about that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you know.
You were the unlicensed taxi driver.
I was.
He was an Uber driver, folks.
Yeah, it was fun. Well, it lasted.
Yeah, so. That's where the unlicensed taxi driver.
And there was many stories of Uber driving,
murder
sex
hookers.
Workers.
Yeah.
Never murdered anybody. That's not my go-to. Actually, they're really good customers.
That's great.
I can honestly say I never had a sex worker that didn't give an additional cash tip.
That's right,
on
Scott.
Top of the tip.
I didn't
the
give him a cash gift, but I did give him a hand job. He liked that a lot. Yeah, it just happened.
No.
That's Wilford, though. What is another voice? So, Southern man, whatever. Wilford, we know what Wilford is. Any other older voices I used to do I don't do anymore? Not really.
No. No.
Well, there's the Fry Brothers, but that actually kind of morphed into Wilford.
And the clown
yeah.
thing.
What's that?
The Fry Brothers is more the clown thing. They both did the Fry Brothers. It was fun for a while.
It's easier to say things that are horrendous in some other voice than your own. That's what I found. It doesn't feel like you're doing it. I'm serious.
Seth, when do you know when the voice is your own and it's not?
It's not. When I do something in Wilford, I'm not saying it.
Folks, I get messages from Wilford Wrong.
You do.
All the time.
You got a New Year's Eve message about your micro penis. Don't feel bad about that.
No.
You know, Wilford told you not to be ashamed.
Dr. Schwartz. Rebecca has some voices.
Does she?
Well, it was interesting when she would actually play along with the Russian spy.
When she speaks Russian, yeah, she's playing along. Yeah.
No, she's played along a couple times. Yeah. But she's done the voice.
She speaks Russian. Yeah.
My name is Natasha.
What? It's true. I think, but Wilford and Becky's roadshow, Sonny and Cher, would be great.
They say I love.
They say our love.
They say our love can't pay the rent. But I don't know fucking the rest of the fucking words.
That kind of stuff.
Well, we would.
Also, by the way, Wilford is also John Lamont. Just to point that out. I just like to point that out a little bit. There's a little bit of John in there. That's a friend of Scott's. Yeah. Very close friend.
He's a friend of all.
He's very close, if you get my drift.
Oh, stop.
Don't know what happens there, but let's just say.
But the one of the odd things about Becky being the Russian spy is actually for a while we had her as a Ukrainian spy reporting to Kiev.
That was awkward because she's not, obviously.
Well, we're not really sure.
Dun, dun. No, the Russian judge, folks. Obviously, Russia is known for being quite bad.
It was originally a reference to poor scoring in Olympic gymnastics competition.
Suspiciously poor scoring. Ergo, you'll hear the Russian national anthem. Now, this is the fun bit, though, folks. Becky has no idea that I put that music in on there. She just thinks we make fun of her. She doesn't know that I actually put the Russian national anthem on top of her reviews. But that's okay. Maybe she should listen to the show. Top tip, she doesn't listen to the show. She finds us boorish, but whatever.
She finds you boorish.
That's true. So that's why now I'm using Wilford's voice when we're just normally living life. It's great.
It's a sick and twisted place.
Amen.
The wine guy's mind.
If you piss me off, she knows if she pisses me off, she's going to get Wilford. Wilford in his full effect. And it's not me. I can't be blamed. It's Wilford. It's not me.
What do the children think of this?
I don't use that voice in front of the children.
You think they don't hear?
Well,
your house echoes.
That's true. I love children. Well, I used to. My probation officer says I'm not allowed to anymore. The damn jury system is rigged. They're like, I love children. They're like, no, there's loving children. And I was like, I don't want to hear the rest of that statement, perverts. So Scott and I often go to meetings for this club. We're in Mambla. I forget what is it, Scott? You know it. You invited me. You said, hey, Wilford, you would really enjoy this club that I go to. And I'm like, what's that? Well, it's Mambla or I don't know. What is it? They had good refreshments.
What the fuck is wrong?
They had like mini sandwiches. It was great. What was it about, Scott?
Pimento sandwiches?
Wait a minute. Is that the place where they had the little... Oh, my God. What the hell's wrong with you, Scott? I like grown people, not... Scott's a pervert. It's terrible. Well, anyway, we're going to take a break. But we'll be right back here on the Wine Vault.
And we're back, folks. The Turley Wine Cellars Library Vineyard Petit Sirah from 2017. We're going to go around the room. We're going to get an absurdly, and absurdly,
yeah,
review from Scott.
Except you're going first.
I am. No, Scott's going first.
No, you're not.
I need to drink it some more, though. I have actually not taken a drink for the last 10 minutes, I think.
Well, it's because you've been yapping about football, which you know nothing about. It's a fantastic wine,
Scott's
folks.
A very butthurt person. I think that this wine deserves a very hearty 90 of my points.
Okay.
No, it doesn't. It's actually a 90. Let me take another drink. I'm actually going to provide this wine 94 of my points.
Baby.
Well, you get him to that numerical score, and you're kind of in a no man's land because there aren't a lot of comps.
It's really difficult. We don't drink a lot of Petit Sirah.
No, we don't. And so I'm going to slow down there. Now, I'm going to say 95 plus, and I'm sure Scott's going to go way higher.
No,
than
I'm
that,
not.
But it's a beautifully done wine that has depth, complexity, and length. Everything that you want from a wine is there. For me, the love isn't there because I don't love Petit Sirah. That, quite frankly, that kind of pisses me off because I really wanted to just completely freak out about this wine, but it's holding me back. But the wine doesn't hold me back. Okay. I hold me back.
You're holding yourself back. So that's you need right. to open up. You need to open up to the love. You need to open
that
up
won't.
To the possibilities.
That won't.
You need to not be so closed and closed-minded.
And the exceptional.
You need to open up to your inner Wilfred Wrong.
I did to the point of 97 or 94 points.
97?
Well, Parker was a little
You said 95.
It's 94. I'm giving
Make
90,
up your fucking mind.
94
son.
Of my points.
You said 95 plus is what you said.
I did say that.
Make up your fucking mind, son.
It's 94
oh, Jesus.
Plus. But I would say 93 Lord. To 95. Right in the middle.
The unbelievable texture of this wine. So many different components.
And quite frankly,
what we did not
94
talk about,
though is low.
What we did not talk about enough about this wine is the length of the finish.
Mm-hmm.
This is a long bastard. 45 seconds?
No, it's more like 60 to 75.
Longer?
It's longer.
It's fucking long. The tannins goes from kind of grippy to dusty to
yeah.
This could go. This is so 17. So 5 years, approximately 5.5, 6 years.
2030. It could go that long.
Oh my god! And what would it show then? What more would it show? It's probably got 15 different elements this thing shows. I love the hazelnut. I love that the herbally thing. And maybe that florally thing is there in the finish a little bit. I'm at 96. And
I think it's high, but
can't
okay.
wait to continue to buy this and to age it. And I'm not going to drink it after 5 or 6 years anymore.
Well, let me say
this. I'm going to hold it longer.
You should.
When I die, there will be library Petit Sirah in my cellar that my family and friends are going to enjoy after my death because I'm going to buy this every fucking year it's offered and I'm going to cellar it.
Well, the 96 is high in the fact that it's not as good as, like, Kay Vintner's The Boy. But it's not.
Really?
No, it's not.
Disagree.
Well, I know you disagree, but you're wrong.
I think you can't compare different varietals in that sense to say that that's better than this. That's personal preference. That's an exceptional wine. This is an exceptional wine. I think I scored that 96 also. And I stand by that. Those are equally unbelievably great wines.
Though the front palate isn't grandiose enough really to get up into that upper echelon, in my opinion. That's where I'd come across.
If that palate's not big,
it's not. You're talking about rarefied air when you get above 95. I think 94 is a really good score, which suggests this wine is fucking fantastic. It really is. And let's get back to the fact that if you go through the winery, it's $42. It's under $50 after shipping.
$42.
So you're talking about a 94 point wine, and that's not. And you, I know that a lot of wine magazines are putting some dumbass scores.
This is not a James Suckling score.
It's not. It isn't. The 94, I think, is very. It might be conservative, but I think it's a little more accurate, and it's more representative of the non Petit Sirah lovers. Review, which is very, I think, a feather in the cap. You get a 94, man. I'm buying stuff with a 90 fucking four.
Yes. The other thing about this.
It's a good wine.
This is not a drink now wine.
It's not. It should be this wine, at least 5 to 7 more years.
And there's nothing wrong with finding the coolest space in your house, whether it's a basement, a crawl space, whatever, and just hiding it there. Or get a refrigerator.
If you don't have any other options, yes.
Put it in a refrigerator.
Yeah. I think that for everybody that loves wine, buying things like this will help you.
You can't go wrong. I moved this bottle twice.
Mm-hmm.
I think I bought this in Germany. No, I bought this when I was in Canal, yeah. Winchester. No.
Yeah, yeah.
So this moved once, and it sat in my basement in a box.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fine at 60 to 70 degrees. Not really proper treatment. I didn't put it out in the sun. I kept it in coolish places in my house, and it was stored properly on its side, but I didn't have a freaking refrigerated wine
cellar.
First of
all, the wine vault, this wine was not stored in the wine vault. This comes from Scott's personal selection. And so the wine vault is about 58 degrees, especially during the winter. During the summer, it's 62. Yeah. So
I get a little higher in my wine cellar. I get like 64 in the summer.
Yeah, we're a little bit lower. This is a 8-foot ceiling.
But I think my humidity is a little better than yours. I think, yeah. I get higher humidity.
But it stays cooler down here. It stays very cool down here year round. Triple B always needs a blanket. Doesn't matter what time of year it is. So right now, I think if we turned it on, it would be 58. It's probably what it is, which for us, it's lovely. It keeps us awake.
For the wine, it's
gorgeous.
Perfect.
Yeah. So a 94 and a 96, a Hall of Fame, a tip of the cap to Turley, which is kind of redundant, but nevertheless, it's okay. So for Rob the Wine Guy and Scott the Licensed Taxi Driver, we're going to bid you adieu, but see you next time here on the Wine Vault. Good night.